Good morning. So I'm on here. You can hear me okay? Very good. Well, it's wonderful to be here with you. We greatly appreciate your sincerity, your generosity, and hospitality that you've shown us. In our brief time here, my wife and I can feel the love and can feel the unity in this congregation, and we appreciate that. You made us feel very welcome. And I personally take great pleasure in sharing the gospel of Jesus with fellow believers, and if there are some here that do not believe, we hope to share it with you as well today. So we'll get right in there in a moment. We'll be reading from John chapter 10, verses 11 through 14. John chapter 10, verses 11 through 14. You know, we live in the information age, not the explanation age. There are vast and enormous amounts of information out there for people to grab onto, just the click of a mouse. But yet we don't have anyone there to help us understand that information, to explain that enormous amount of information to us. People can become easily confused. In that confusion, they can become easily influenced, especially in terms of faith, in terms of God, in terms of Jesus and religion. So I think it's important for us to be reminded of the basics. In a moment, we'll ask the question, why do we look to Jesus? What makes Jesus special? It's important for us to be reminded of that as believers. And before I get there, I'd like to tell you a little story about my nephew, Owen. Before Owen turned 3, he's a little bitty guy, I decided to take Owen to the baseball park. Now, this is the first time Owen has ever been to the baseball park, and this is the first time I've ever taken Owen anywhere. And my parents, who were watching him that weekend, they said, Chet, keep an eye on the little guy, because if you're not careful, he's gone. Quick little guy. I said, no problem. I got this. Strap him in the car seat. We go out to the baseball park, and when we get there, he's scared. He's a little bitty guy, so he's scared. He wants me to carry him in. So I pick him up and start to carry him in the ball field. As we approach the gate, the atmosphere really comes alive. I mean, there are 3 baseball fields, one right in front of us, one to the right, one to the left. And as we're entering into the gate, you could hear the crack of the bat, you could hear the crowd going wild, you could smell the hot dogs and popcorn. It just, the atmosphere was sensory overload, okay? And at this moment, when we're passing through the gate, Owen, he starts to shake and wiggle, and he wants to get down. So I put him down, I put him right in front of me and start walking. And we start walking through the gate, and all of a sudden, he stops. He's in front of me. His little head turns over here to the right and sees that ballpark. His little head turns to the left and sees that baseball park. He looks straight ahead, and he turns around and looks at me, looks me square in the eyes. He says, I don't need you anymore, Uncle Chet. And he turns around and runs 30 yards ahead of me. He's something else. You know, that experience illustrates, for me anyway, humanity's need for independence. We have an inherent need for self-autonomy, self-sufficiency. Even when we're carried to our destination, like I carried Owen, by plane, train, automobile, shoes on our feet, clothes on our back, all this help, we get help to where we're going. But yet, we get caught up in our environment. Sensory overload happens to us when we start moving around this life, and we think we're doing it ourselves. Independence and self-sufficiency are something that drive us. Yet, we forget that someone has helped us get there. We shouldn't get confused, folks, that our nature is inherently selfish. We shouldn't get confused that someone has helped us get to where we're going, and someone will always help us get to where we're going. We need leadership. We need guidance. We need someone to help us go in the right direction. And that's what Jesus offers us. He offers us leadership. Let's read John chapter 10, verses 11 through 14, and we'll see this. I am the good shepherd. The shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. Why do we look to Jesus? We look to Jesus for leadership. We look to Jesus for leadership. We're a nation. We're a nation that prides itself on choice and freedom. But we get confused. We actually think we start making the choices ourselves. We actually think we start to create the options ourselves. But we don't. We don't. We're a nation who, from a very young age, it's ingrained in us that we have certain inalienable rights, that we're free. And I suppose, truly, on a macrocosmic level, we are free people. But by associating humanity with sheep, Jesus says that we as a people, as a human race, are not capable of complete independence. It's our nature to follow. It's our nature to seek leadership. It's our nature to go in one direction or another. We will be led. By relating humanity to sheep, Jesus says we are a fickle people. We are a gullible people. And we'll go in the direction we are led. Louis Cheskin was a marketing researcher, marketing innovator, clinical psychologist, who before passing away at age 81, he essentially created modern marketing. He observed that people's perceptions of products and services were directly related to aesthetic design. And he named this relationship sensation transference. Sensation transference. In other words, what the product looks like on the box, it helps you relate to the product. And it sells you. You want to buy the product just because of its packaging. People's perceptions of value, appeal, and relevance are wrapped up in the packaging of the product. Cheskin found that people couldn't resist transferring their feelings onto the packaging itself. Some of his more successful campaigns included the Betty Crocker spoon. When you see that in the grocery store, you know what it is, don't you? You see that from a distance, I'm getting a little hungry, right? It's identifiable. I trust it. Oh, who couldn't resist this one, right? The Gerber baby. Such a cute little baby. I trust that baby. My baby wants that food. Boom. And the big one, the Marlboro Man. I hope you don't get mad at me for putting the Marlboro Man in your church building this morning, but it's the truth. Cheskin and his group convinced Philip Morris in a world that where more men were smokers than women, that they must appeal to man's masculinity to sustain that group and to make them feel comfortable, to make them feel as though they need this product because I'm a man. Sensory manipulation is an industry. Marketing is an industry. It's a big business. It's a reality. You don't think that's happening in the spiritual realm? You don't think you're being marketed to and sold to on a daily basis? It's happening. It's happening in the spiritual realm as we speak. We need leadership. Folks, it's tragic if we don't recognize our need for leadership. It's tragic if we don't understand our nature as humans, that we have an inherent need to be led. You understand? It's our nature. It's our nature. Jesus is just simply reminding us of that. Do not be fooled. Do not be fooled into thinking you're in control. Don't be fooled into thinking you're a completely independent person, because you're not, and you never will be. It's not in your nature as a human being. You need other people. You need to be led. That's our nature. That's what we'll do, you see? What's sad is we're so selfish and we're so stubborn and independent that we don't recognize that. We just fight that notion. I'm independent. I'm free. I can do what I want. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. Right? We do that. We kick and scream like we're going to bed at night like a little kid. Folks, it's our nature to be led. It's our nature. We need to realize that. That's when Jesus' words ring true. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. I can lead you if you let me. I can lead you if you let me, because you will follow someone. You will follow something. Whether it be a television ad, buy this product, this makes you feel good. Whether it be a magazine ad, I need that watch. You don't understand, I need the watch. Whether it be a spouse, a friend, money drives a lot of people, folks. And we need to realize that in this culture. Money's king, cash is king in this culture. Sex drives people. Which way will you be led? See, we need a leader. We need leadership. That's what we need. And Jesus offers that. I am the good shepherd. I can lead you. I can lead you. John chapter 10, verses 11 through 14, offer us some other angles about Jesus' identity and what makes Jesus important to us. Jesus is consistent. Jesus is consistent. He offers consistency. There are two antagonists set in John chapter 10. You have the wolf and you have the hired hand. Now, what the wolf and the hired hand represent, if we look at the context of John chapter 10, back up to John chapter 9, we see that Jesus healed a blind man in John chapter 9. Okay? And when Jesus healed that blind man, the Pharisees got mad. They were irate with Jesus. Not only were they irate with Jesus, they were irate. They were absolutely upset with the guy who got healed. And the guy who got healed just sitting there like, well, I don't know. I kind of like the guy. He's helped me see. But the Pharisees were upset. They were angry. They even got angry at the blind man's parents. The wolf and the hired hand here represent a world view, a way of seeing the world that is distorted, it's fragmented, it's shaken up. Jesus represents an alternative way to see the world. He says the Pharisaic mindset is not right. Not only is it not right, the Pharisaic mindset invites a predatory atmosphere of disillusionment. It invites a... Don't you listen to what I'm saying here, because this is important. I may not get a chance to talk to you guys again. But I want us to all understand what's happening right here. An alternative way of seeing the world, if it's not through the eyes of Jesus, invites a predatory atmosphere of disillusionment. There's something out there that's trying to kill you. Make no bones about it. Understand that. In one way or another, it's going to come into your life and it's going to get you. Earlier in John chapter 10, he says the thief comes to kill, to steal, and destroy. And folks, you better believe, I think we can all, a lot of us can agree, that's the truth. That's the truth. There's something out there trying to hurt you. There's something out there trying to kill you. And how does it do that? How does it do this? I'm getting a little too animated up here. I need to slow down a little bit. How does it do this? Psychologically. Sensory manipulation. How does it do this? Spiritually. It inhabits you. It consumes you. It makes you turn into something you were not yesterday. How does it do this? Theologically. Theology is important, folks. Theology is how we view ourselves in this world in relation to God. You see, God, He takes that distorted mindset the world offers and He cleans it up. He lets us see ourselves for who we truly are. He lets us see the world clearly for what it truly is. Jesus offers a consistent way of thinking, a consistent way of seeing yourself, a consistent way of seeing the world, your family, your job, your spouse, your children, da da, bam, 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 bam. It's just a ripple effect. It keeps going and going and going and going. You understand? Theology is how we construct identity, not only for ourselves, but for community, for our church. It begins with theology, because we are inconsistent people. We go up and down and up and down. We're in a good mood and then we're in a bad mood. Yeah? We can't gauge our personality. I'll read you in transcript form a conversation. I've cleared this with my wife, so she won't mind. A transcript form of a conversation my wife and I had a few weeks ago. This is a real conversation. 10 a.m. on Monday morning. She's going to get me eventually. She's just really going to get me. 10 a.m. on Monday morning, me to my wife, you're going to grab some breakfast. My wife, that makes me sick to think about eggs. How about a cheeseburger? Of course, I say okay, even though I didn't want a burger. We'll have a lesson on submission tonight, fellas, if we can. 1 week later, Monday, 10 a.m., same time. You want to grab some lunch? Me to my wife, thinking last week she wanted to grab lunch at 10 a.m. You want to grab some lunch? My wife looks at me. Are you kidding? It's 10 a.m. I want an omelet. None of us are completely consistent people, are we? Our appetites drive us. That's what it does. It's something propels us to make decisions. We need to understand our nature. We are not consistent people. Jesus is consistent. He's consistent in how we commune with the Father. His theology does not shake. It does not rattle. It's solid for us to cling to and stand on and be there. It's consistent. Jesus offers leadership and consistency. 19th century Irish writer and poet Oscar Wilde, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Oscar Wilde, wrote, "Consistency is the last refuge of the unimaginative." Sharing a similar view, English writer and poet Aldous Huxley wrote, "Consistency is contrary to nature, contrary to life. The only completely consistent people are dead." I suppose in one way, You know, they're right. With the world's mentality, the clock in, clock in, clock in, clock out, clock in, clock out, that mentality, consistency is horrible. I hate it. Probably you do too, right? The mundane nature of life. But consistency can be very important. If we look at consistency for what it really is, when we board a plane, we want that engine to be consistently firing on all cylinders, don't we? When we plant our crops, we want the sun to come out every day, right? Consistency can be a good thing. Consistency can be a good thing when you're under the knife. I want that surgeon's hands to be completely consistent. If it's not a robot, I want the robot to be consistent. Consistency, quite literally, can be a lifesaver. You can ask Gene Wilson this from Memphis, Tennessee. You're probably not going to believe me when I tell you this story, but you can go home and Google it. It's a true story. Gene Wilson. Gene Wilson, for 3 years, Gene Wilson ordered a large, thin crust pepperoni pizza and 2 Diet Cokes from Domino's Pizza at 10 o'clock every morning. For 3 years, she did this. It stopped one Saturday. This happened a few years ago. It stopped one Saturday. She didn't call in. Gene Wilson didn't call in her normal order. Sunday came around. Gene Wilson didn't call in. When Susan Guy, an employee of Domino's, showed up to work on Monday, she was ready to take Gene Wilson her order. The other employees were like, nah, she's broken her streak, you know, Gene Wilson, she had it for 3 years, but now it's over. Susan Guy, the employee, said, wait, something's wrong. Gene Wilson orders a large thin crust pepperoni pizza and 2 Diet Cokes every day at 10 o'clock a.m. I'm going to go check on her. Her boss said, no, don't do that. You don't need to go do that. Susan Guy, the employee, said, no. You can clock me out. I'm going to go check on Miss Wilson. Something's wrong. So she goes over there. She checks on Mrs. Wilson. Knocks on the door. Knocks on the windows. She finally calls 911. 911, police and paramedics come. Break open the door. And sure enough, Gene Wilson had fallen and couldn't get to a phone. And they took her off to the hospital and she was okay. Story turned out good. Now, I'm not telling you to every day at 10 o'clock order a large thin crust pepperoni pizza and 2 Diet Cokes. It's wishful thinking probably for some of us, right? Me especially. But I am saying something about consistency. When the employee of Domino's noticed the break in consistency, she equated that with something being wrong. She equated the break in consistency with something being wrong. That's because consistency should be constant. There should be no break there. We need to understand that we as a people are inconsistent. We need consistency. Jesus offers that. Jesus offers leadership. Jesus offers consistency. I don't know about you folks, but sometimes I need some direction. Sometimes I encounter some hard situations, some hard choices, and I need some direction and guidance. I need leadership, right? Maybe some of you have had father figures or some mentor in your life that you've relied on for a long, long time, and all of a sudden you wake up one day and they're gone. Who do you look to for leadership? Who do you look to for leadership and guidance? Jesus offers that. Jesus offers that leadership. Consistency. Consistency he offers. I just demonstrated how fickle people can be and how gullible people can be at times. Didn't really demonstrate that, but I think we all know. We need consistency in our life. Are you tired of making bad choices? Are you tired of doing good, falling flat on your face? That gets old, doesn't it? Consistency we need to adopt in our life. And how do we do that? We do that through Jesus. Jesus offers a consistent path to the Father, a consistent way of seeing yourself in the world, a consistent, get this, a consistent identity. A consistent identity is what Jesus offers us. If there's anything that's happening in your life this morning that you need guidance for or about, Jesus is the answer to that. Is there something in your life that continues to burden you and plague you? It won't go away, and you end up always succumbing to that temptation or succumbing to that atmosphere and environment? Consistency. Jesus offers a consistent way to see yourself in that situation and combat it and fight it and win. Jesus offers leadership, and Jesus offers consistency. If there's anything we can help you with this morning in those areas, will you come as we stand and sing?
Jesus is tenderly calling thee home.